It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Muslim cleric gunned down in Mombasa, Kenya. South Sudanese leaders pledge a transition government within 60 days. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Gunmen Tuesday shot and killed a prominent Muslim cleric in Mombasa, the fourth religious leader to be gunned down in the Kenyan city in the past 2 years. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenyan officials and witnesses say unidentified gunmen on motorcycles killed Sheikh Idris as he left his house Tuesday to attend morning prayers at a nearby mosque. According to the family, the 65-year-old Idris, who chaired the local council of imams and preachers, was shot in the stomach. Idris had been expected to testify in a Mombasa court Wednesday after he filed a case against radical youths and the committee running Mombasa's Sakina Mosque for wrongful dismissal from his duties. He had been thrown out of the mosque late last year by angry youths armed with knives. Before then, he led prayers and gave sermons at the mosque for 35 years. In an interview with Viewer in late May, the slain cleric said young radicals were not happy with his stand that fighting in neighbouring Somalia was not jihad or holy war. Religious leaders and government officials have condemned Tuesday's killing and have called on the security agencies to find the killers. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The three Muslim leaders killed earlier in the city were accused of having ties to Al-Shabaab, the Al-Qaeda-linked militant group based in Somalia. Kenya has troops in the neighboring country fighting militants who retaliated with attacks in Kenya, most notably the assault on Nairobi's Westgate Mall last year, in which more than 60 were killed. In Ethiopia, South Sudanese President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar met Tuesday in a bid to end 6 months of war and forge a transitional government within 60 days. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn spoke with reporters after the two leaders met.
The main outcome of this summit is that they agreed fully to commit themselves for already signed agreement and to complete all the negotiations within the coming 60 days and then establish a transitional government of national unity and proceed for reforming the country.
The two South Sudanese leaders met on the sidelines of a regional leaders' summit in Addis Ababa, organized by the East African Regional Bloc, IGAD, which has been mediating negotiations. The group has threatened sanctions and other punitive actions if agreement is not reached. A second ceasefire reached last month failed to halt the fighting in South Sudan, which broke out in December. Thousands have died and hundreds of thousands have fled their homes, with the United Nations warning of famine unless crops can be planted in the next few weeks. President Obama spoke by telephone Tuesday with Egypt's new leader, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, urging the new leader to implement needed reforms. A White House statement said Mr. Obama stressed the continuing U.S. support for the political, economic, and social aspirations of the Egyptian people and respect for their universal rights. They're said to have reaffirmed their strategic partnership, which has been under strain since Mr. Sisi, then Army Chief, ousted Islamist President Mohamed Morsi last July. Mr. Sisi won a landslide election in May that was boycotted by the Muslim Brotherhood. South Africa's Minister of Mineral Resources Tuesday said he was hopeful talks between platinum companies and striking workers could lead to the end of an almost five-month-long strike.
I strongly believe we have done enough work over the past 2 weeks through the technical task team and the meeting which have been taking place almost on a daily basis since then for the parties to be able to move forward. And I encourage them to move on their own.
Minister Nwankwo Ramalodi said his office was withdrawing from the talks, insisting he was not giving up on negotiations, but stepped in only to facilitate a resumption of dialogue. The South African Central Bank chief warned Tuesday the platinum mines could close and undermine the country's economy. The South African economy contracted 0.6% in the first quarter of the year. The companies say they can't afford the union's demand of a doubling of the basic minimum wage. Strike has cost employers $2 billion. Workers have forfeited nearly $1 billion in wages and benefits. The strike has affected about 45% of the world's supply of platinum. Three northern Malian rebel groups signed an accord Tuesday in Algeria, pledging to work for peace. The National Movement for the Liberation of Azawad signed the Algiers Declaration, along with the High Council for the Unity of Azawad and the Arab Movement of Azawad. They also pledged increasing dialogue with the Bamako government. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's warring factions agreed to form a unity government.
They agreed to complete the dialogue process within the coming 60 days on what, how, when, and who to the culmination into the formation of transitional government of national unity.
Haile Mariam Desalegn is Ethiopia's prime minister. A controversial Ugandan official is expected to be chosen today as president of the UN General Assembly. Thousands of African migrants are rescued from the Mediterranean amid a surge in migration to Europe. And a U.S. congressional subcommittee holds hearings today on Nigeria's Boko Haram.
We will be receiving an update on what is happening with Boko Haram in general. So the sole focus is not on the kidnapping of the girls, but what is happening in general in Nigeria right now.
Congresswoman Karen Bass is a member of the U.S. House of Representatives Subcommittee on Africa. The WHO says access to safe blood can reduce maternal deaths, and scientists come up with a new way to fight malaria. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and his former vice president, now rebel leader Riek Machar, will work to set up a transitional government of national unity within 2 months. Martha van der Wolf reports for VOA from Addis Ababa, where regional leaders met on Tuesday to discuss the six-month-old conflict in South Sudan.
President Kiir and Machar met for the second time since the conflict started in mid-December. The leaders had signed an agreement in early May, recommitting to a ceasefire that has been repeatedly violated by both sides. Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn says the two warring parties have agreed to reach a settlement for the South Sudan problem.
They agreed to complete the dialogue process within the coming 60 days on what, how, when, and who to the culmination into the formation of transitional government of national unity. And they also agreed to sign on the matrix of the timeline of the activities within the 60 days time frame set for themselves.
Regional leaders such as Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni and Kenyan Vice President William Ruto attended Tuesday's talks. The East African bloc IGAD has been mediating the talks since the beginning. Discussions will continue within the coming days in Ethiopia on the details of the peace plan. The African Union's Peace and Security Commissioner Ismail Chergi urged the two sides to be serious about the discussion.
It is the hope and expectation of the African Union that it is high time that the warring parties will heed the call of their people and the international community to take their forthcoming political negotiations seriously and not use it as a forum to advance partisan position and delay a final outcome to the talks.
The conflict in South Sudan has turned into a humanitarian crisis with more than 1.3 million people displaced. A food shortage is also looming, possibly even affecting more citizens. The unrest was sparked by a power struggle between President Kiir and Machar. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Witnesses in Nigeria say suspected Boko Haram militants have kidnapped 20 women near Chibok, the town where the group abducted more than 200 schoolgirls in April, but police are denying the report. Meanwhile, the U.S. House of Representatives Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa will hold a hearing today, Wednesday, on Nigeria. In this interview with reporter Peter Clarty, Congresswoman Karen Bass expresses concern about reports of increasing violence carried out by Boko Haram militants.
I believe that in our committee we will be receiving an update on what is happening with Boko Haram in general. So the sole focus is not on the kidnapping of the girls, but what is happening in general in Nigeria right now, and in particular the conditions in the north.
What specifically will you be looking at, and what help, if need be, will the U.S. Possibly offer Nigeria to help in that directive?
Well, the U.S. has been very involved and is helping Nigeria, but, you know, it's a little bit of a sensitive subject. To the extent that Nigeria wants us to be involved, we're involved, but we can't get involved any more than the country wants us to. So we do have, you know, that the president sent over 80 military advisors that are in Chad. And, you know, there's different things that we're doing to help in terms of intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, all of that. But, again, it is a little bit touchy when the country that you're working with is not necessarily wanting you to be that involved.
You were recently there. Tell me your experience and what is the relationship between Washington and specifically Abuja?
Well, I have to tell you that the purpose of my trip was really a trade mission with the Commerce Secretary. And so I was not focusing on the security issue or on Boko Haram. And so I was there with U.S. businesses, and we were watching essentially businesses be very successful in making specific deals in the energy sector with the business sector of Nigeria. And I think that that's really the sad situation, because on the one hand, we should be celebrating Nigeria's success and Nigeria's advancement to be the largest, strongest economy on the continent. And at the same time, we're dealing with the tragedy from groups like Boko Haram. And we're also dealing with very poor conditions in the north.
What are your expectations for tomorrow's hearing about the overall status of the issue of security in Nigeria and Boko Haram, to be specific?
Well, my expectations are really to get an update primarily from former Ambassador Sanders, who was recently in Nigeria. The other witnesses, I think, will be giving us their perspective, and especially their perspective on Boko Haram. So what this hearing will not be, there will be no representation from the State Department or from any other part of the administration. And so we will not be getting up-to-date information from the administration's point of view. And I think that's unfortunate, but that's who's on the witness list so far.
Congresswoman Karen Bass is a member of the U.S. House of Representatives Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa. She spoke with reporter Peter Clotte from Washington, D.C. The U.N. General Assembly is expected to, today, Wednesday, elect by acclamation the foreign minister of Uganda as president of his 69th session. Sam Kutesa has a controversial record of being embroiled in domestic corruption allegations, and as the international spokesman for Uganda's recent anti-homosexual law. As VOA's Margaret Bashir reports from the United Nations, some have questioned whether Kutesa should lead the 193-nation assembly.
Sam Kutesa has been foreign minister for Uganda's longtime president, Yoweri Museveni, on and off since 2005. Most recently, he garnered international attention for defending the Ugandan government's harsh anti-homosexuality law that the president signed in February. In the past, Kutesa has survived political censure by the Ugandan parliament following a corruption scandal. No formal charges were brought against him. Questions, however, have been raised about a company he once chaired and is still believed to own shares in, Entebbe Handling Services, or ENHAS, which has contracts with at least one UN peacekeeping mission in Africa, and whether this presents a conflict of interest. A UN spokesperson said the organization is trying to ascertain its current relationship with ENHAS. According to the UN's procurement website, the company has been a registered vendor with it since June 2006. Kutesa's candidacy has inspired a petition on change.org, a website that hosts public petitions, which has garnered more than 11,000 signatures. Milton Alimadi, the editor and publisher of the Black Star News website, started the petition, which calls on U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry to revoke Kutesa's visa so he cannot come to New York.
It's one of the quickest ways to stop Mr. Kutesa from becoming the president of the United Nations General Assembly. I think certainly that the recent precedent, of course, was when the U.S. Decided to not provide a visa for the Iranian designated new permanent representative to the United Nations.
In that case, the Iranian diplomat had been implicated in the 1979 hostile takeover of the U.S. embassy in Tehran and the ensuing hostage crisis. But the United States rarely invokes its right as host country to withhold a diplomat's visa. Washington has made no move to block Kutesa's entry. State Department spokesperson Marie Harf said recently that the choice of the Ugandan to preside over the General Assembly is up to member states, specifically the African Regional Group, whose turn it is this year to put forth a candidate.
Members of the regional groups are the ones who select the leader. So in terms of being part of the selection process, we of course weren't. And look, no matter who's president of the General Assembly, we will continue standing up, defending LGBT rights at the UN.
UN spokesman Stéphane Dujarric echoed that, noting that the president of the General Assembly is not a UN staff position.
The president of the General Assembly is chosen by the member states. It is entirely a decision of the General Assembly. It is not the Secretary General's decision, or he has no input into that process.
Milton Alimadi says Sam Kutesa is not the best candidate Africa has to offer and urged him to withdraw his candidacy.
The right thing to do would be for Mr. Kutesa to just bow out, and the African continent would still have the opportunity to have another candidate.
Barring that unlikely outcome, Kutesa will be proclaimed president of the 69th session of the General Assembly on Wednesday and take up his duties in September. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
It's Wednesday morning, June 11th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. Italian officials are warning that a surge in the number of migrants trying to reach the shores of Europe from North Africa in recent days is threatening the credibility of the European Union. As Henry Richwell reports from London, tens of thousands of migrants are exploiting the instability in Libya to set off on the perilous journey across the Mediterranean.
In the seas off the Italian island of Sicily, hundreds of migrants are packed aboard a decrepit fishing boat that is slowly sinking. Among them are pregnant women and children. As an Italian rescue ship nears, the migrants rush to the side, causing their boat to list dangerously. More than 5,000 migrants were picked up in the Mediterranean by the Italian Navy last weekend. The influx means 2014 is on course to be a record year for arrivals into southern Europe, says Eva Moncure of the European Union border agency Frontex.
At the moment, just in the central Mediterranean, we have seen over 40,000 migrants arriving primarily from Libya. Libya became the most important transit and departure point for migrants from all over Africa.
Several heavily armed militia groups are vying for power in Libya, and that chaos is feeding the migration, says Moncure.
The border control in Libya is very limited, and people smugglers whose business is to charge money for putting people on boats and sending them over to Europe are very comfortable there at the moment.
The migrants come from across Africa and the Middle East. Many are simply looking for a better life in Europe, but there are also many people escaping conflict in places like Syria and Eritrea. After a migrant boat sank off Italy last October, killing about 360 people, the Italian Navy launched an ongoing search and rescue operation. Italy's Interior Minister Angelino Alfano has called for the rest of the European Union to share the burden.
Vogliono che diciamo loro che abbiamo bisogno che nel Mediterraneo intervenga l'Europa con una.
Mr. Alfano says Europe needs to intervene and take over the rescue operation. He said those people arriving are asylum seekers who do not want to stay in Italy but want to go to other European countries. European Union rules say those seeking asylum must apply in the country where they first arrive, but authorities in Malta and Italy say they are overwhelmed. The death toll among the migrants grows by the week. Meanwhile, EU authorities say they are planning for further increases in migration because the political chaos in Libya shows little sign of stabilising. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The World Health Organization reports that lack of access to safe blood is responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of childbearing women every year. In advance of World Blood Donor Day on June 14th, the WHO is calling for action to make safe blood supplies available to prevent maternal deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports each day about 800 women die from complications related to pregnancy and childbirth. Almost all of these deaths occur in developing countries, with more than half of them in sub-Saharan Africa and nearly one-third in South Asia. WHO Coordinator for Blood Transfusion Safety, Neelam Dhingra, says most of these deaths can be prevented.
Severe bleeding during pregnancy, delivery, and after childbirth is the single biggest cause of maternal death and can kill a healthy woman within 2 hours if she is unattended. Urgent access to safe supplies of blood for transfusion is therefore crucial to saving the lives of these women. In many countries, blood supplies are inadequate and safe blood is not accessible when and where it is needed.
Dr. Dhingra explains many communities are simply not aware of the importance of having a safe blood supply on hand. She says another and major reason behind the lack of a safe blood supply is that there are not enough voluntary, unpaid blood donors.
Many countries which have developed robust and strong blood systems, they have based it on voluntary, unpaid donation. It is also recognized that the infection prevalence is much lower in blood which is obtained from voluntary unpaid blood donors. So there are issues related to safety, to security of supply, as well as ethical concerns.
This conviction is so strong that past World Health Assemblies have adopted several resolutions in which member states have agreed to develop national blood banks based on a voluntary unpaid donor system. The World Health Organization reports about 108 million blood donations a year are collected worldwide. It says more than half of these are collected in wealthy countries, home to 18% of the world's population. While poor countries remain underserved, data show significant increases of voluntary unpaid blood donations in low and middle income countries. WHO says countries that have successfully reduced maternal deaths by improving access to a safe blood supply include Cambodia, Nepal, Bangladesh, Zambia, and Ethiopia. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A new way to fight malaria aims to eliminate the female mosquitoes that spread the deadly disease. Scientists have developed mosquitoes that produce almost exclusively male offspring. The researchers say the technique could wipe out mosquito populations in a few months without the use of insecticides. VOA Steve Barragona reports.
There are plenty of good reasons to want to get rid of mosquitoes, says Peter Hotez, dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine.
Well, mosquitoes have been labeled as the most virulent-killing animal in the world. More people die of mosquito-transmitted infections than they do almost any other type of illness.
Spraying insecticides is one of the most effective ways to control mosquitoes, but spraying comes with downsides. It can kill bees and other good insects and cause environmental damage. And mosquitoes eventually develop resistance to the pesticides.
And we found a way. We found like an Achilles heel of these mosquitoes.
Imperial College London researcher Nikolai Wienbichler says the mosquito's Achilles heel is the 400 copies of a particular gene on the X chromosome. That's the chromosome that carries the traits making the insects female. Females are the ones that bite, and they are the ones that produce more mosquitoes. Using genetic engineering, Wienbichler and his colleagues introduced a protein from a creature called a slime mold that cuts each copy of that mosquito gene in one specific place. The slime mold enzyme is designed to turn on when the mosquitoes make sperm, slicing the X chromosome in 400 places.
You can imagine that that's pretty bad for a chromosome, right? So it gets destroyed. It cannot be passed on to the next generation.
That leaves only male offspring. And those offspring also would produce only male offspring. Eventually, the population would crash. And Wienbichler says it would be eliminated without harming anything else.
If you compare what we are doing to, for example, insecticides, which target any insect species out there, our method is really like very specific. So there may be hundreds of mosquito species in the environment, but our method really only would target that one.
They published the research in the journal Nature Communications. They have more tests to do to make sure the method is safe and effective.
It's an interesting finding, an exciting finding. It's still at a very early stage.
Baylor's Peter Hotez was not involved in the research, but he says it will take more than just designer mosquitoes to beat malaria. New drugs and vaccines will be needed, along with bed nets and clearing their breeding grounds with good old-fashioned puddle draining. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with the rugby. Host Tunisia beat Senegal 22-14 as Ivory Coast edged Uganda 22-19 in semi-final action at the Confederation of African Rugby Sevens Cup in Nabuel on Tuesday. Consequently, Tunisia faced Ivory Coast in the finals while Senegal play Uganda in the bronze medal playoff on Saturday. In golf, Kenya took a one-point lead on aggregate ahead of defending champions South Africa on day one at the All-Africa Challenge Trophy in Nairobi on Tuesday. Tanzania lies third, followed by Zambia and Uganda in the 22-nation women's golf contest. South Africa's Kara Goriel leads in the individual scores. She's followed by Kenyans Josephine Ainley, Naomi Wafula, Ugandan Flavia Namakula, and South Africa's Magda Kruger. In cricket, Uganda will stage the ICC Division 3 League in Kampala, the International Cricket Council revealed on Tuesday. The contest will feature Bermuda, Nepal, United States of America, Uganda, along with two more teams yet to emerge from the qualifying contests. The finalists in the contest in October earn promotion to ICC Division 2 next year. Turning to athletics, Egypt's Africa javelin record holder Ihab Abdelrahman El Sayed and Kenyan All-Africa Games champion Julius Yego go for glory at the IAAF Diamond League in Oslo, Norway today, Wednesday. A Kenyan battle featuring Jairus Kipchoge Birech, Paul Kipsiele Koech, Haron Lagat, and Brimin Kiprop Kipruto unfolds in the 3,000-meter steeplechase. Ethiopians Yeneo Alamireo and Dejen Gebremeskel face Kenyan rivals Caleb Mwangangi Ndiku and Isaiah Kiplagat at Koech in 5,000 meters. Kenyan world champion Eunice Sum encounters Morocco's Malika Akawi and Kenyan Janet Jepkosgei in women's 800 meters. Ivory Coast's Muriela Hore and Botswana's Amantle Monsho compete in the women's 200 meters and 400 meters respectively as African champion Simon Magakwe of South Africa sprints in 100 meters. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Wednesday morning comes from Aliu Sano of Juba, South Sudan. He says, dear VOA, since December 15, 2013, the people of South Sudan, especially the internally displaced, have been experiencing a terrible moment. But I'm optimistic that the current round of peace talks will yield a positive outcome. We thank you, Aliu Sano of Juba, South Sudan, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Witnesses in Nigeria say that suspected Boko Haram militants have kidnapped 20 women near the town where the group abducted more than 200 schoolgirls in April, but police are denying the report. The witnesses said Monday that gunmen drove into the northeastern Garkin Fulani settlement and forced the women into their vehicles. They say the abductions took place on Thursday. The settlement is near Chibok, the town where the April abductions occur. Gunmen have shot and killed a prominent Muslim cleric in Mombasa, the fourth religious leader to be killed in the Kenyan city in the past 2 years. Police say Sheikh Mohammed Idris, the chairman of Kenya's Council of Imams and Preachers, was fatally shot outside a mosque on Tuesday morning. That's it for this Wednesday, June 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouman, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very lovely day.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
put your flags up in the sky.
Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit VOAfootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at VOAfootball.com.